Hey, I'm your host, Mari Wagner, and you're listening to the Ever Be Podcast, where faith meets lifestyle. I'm so excited you're here. Whether you're a new listener or a longtime follower, I know there's something here for you. Pull up a chair and listen in for insightful, real-life conversations and actionable steps on how to claim the full life God created you for. If you're a woman desiring to live a Christ-centered life in today's modern world, then this is for you. Welcome to Ever Be. Welcome back to Ever Be, everybody. Today, we are going to dive deep into women's hormone health today. And it's going to be a conversation that I'm super excited to have and I think is so important. We have a lovely guest here today, Dr. Sarah Peterson. She is an expert in helping women balance their hormones, heal, and support their fertility. And I know that we're going to learn so, so much from her today. So welcome, Dr. Sarah.
Thank you so much.
Can you share a little bit about who you are? What are you currently doing? How did you get into this practice? Give us some background info.
Yes, I am an OBGYN and I have a clinic called Vera Health and Fertility, and I specialize in holistic fertility and hormone balance. So our whole focus is nutrition is the cornerstone of everything that we do. Let's really get to the root cause of what's going on with your period pain, your PCOS, your hormone imbalances, your fertility, and try to heal your body as naturally as possible with a combination of Western medicine and our holistic approach.
That is beautiful. I love that. And that's why I was from the beginning attracted to your guys' practice, because I'm always trying to find that blend of both, because I think there is such beauty in both. So I love that that's the perspective that you're coming from. And Dr. Sarah is Catholic. So I know that faith plays a big role just in the way that you approach your patients and the way that you walk alongside them, which is so beautiful. Let's jump into Ever Be moments and let's hear, how is God working in your life lately? What is a little Ever Be moment that you've had?
I think my favorite things of all time are when people send me their positive pregnancy tests. It just brings me so much joy and makes me so happy for them. I had a patient recently who came to me. She had failed 2 rounds of IVF. She was kind of coming to me as a last ditch effort, and we found out that she had endometriosis and she had something called pelvic venous congestion and she had ureaplasma, just a lot of things going on, lots of things that we needed to treat. She had a horrible gut, like lots of gut issues. And sometimes that process can be super overwhelming. And part of her faith journey is that she went to Medjugorje and had a, you know, big healing experience. And I think that is also just a huge pillar. I always say spirituality and mentality is one of the 6 pillars of hormone balance. And we worked on all those things. And then she just told me that she had a positive pregnancy test. So it's just fun to see all the 6 pillars of hormone balance come to fruition.
That is amazing. That is so beautiful. I love that your patients get to share those moments with you too.
Yeah, it's best. I have the best job in the world.
You do. My Ever Be moment, I thought it was only fitting I would share something kind of on topic here. So I've shared on my podcast before that we've struggled with infertility, and it's been a journey that's full of highs and lows, as anybody who's gone through anything like that, I'm sure can relate to. And throughout our journey, I've always found comfort and strength in one certain Bible verse that I always come back to. It's Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And every time I feel stuck or sad or hopeless or nervous, or there's like a big thing I have to tackle, I like always come back to that Bible verse. And I just repeat it like over and over again. And it's been my anchor. And I hadn't like prayed with that Bible verse or thought about it in a long time. And then just recently, a few days ago, I felt like overwhelmed and I just had a hard day. And it was just kind of down about the whole process and everything. And I was just in my head and I was like, how am I supposed to keep going? Like, how am I supposed to keep waiting? Like, what do I have to do for my body to heal? Like, how am I supposed to keep waiting? And I have this little app on my phone that does like Bible verses on the corner of your lock screen on your phone. And I've had it on there for a long time, but I feel like after a while you kind of glaze over it a little bit because you just like, you see it every day. And I just like hadn't looked at it in a long time. And literally immediately as I was thinking those thoughts, my eyes went to my lock screen and it lit up and it showed that Bible verse on the lock screen, Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So that was my moment this past week where I was like, God is with us. It's just a reminder. God is listening. God is with us through it all. And he gives us the strength to get through all the trials.
For sure. Yes.
Okay. Let's jump into the nitty-gritty of today's episode, all the information. Let's just kick it off. I feel like people are finally talking about hormones and learning about hormones. And you hear the phrase hormone balance being mentioned a lot now, at least the world I'm in social media. I feel like there's been such a rise in it the past few years of people interested in like, what does that mean? What is hormone balance? And I know so many women wonder like, what does that actually mean? Does that apply to me? Because sometimes we see things online and we're like, does this relate to me or not? What does hormone balance really look like? So can you just start out by just setting a foundation for us? What is hormone balance? Why is it important?
Yes, I love that. It's true. The core is essential. So my goals for you are that you have a cycle every 24 to 35 days, and then it's very regular. So if you have a 24-day cycle, you want to be somebody that has a 24, 26, 25. You don't want to be ping-ponging between 24 days, 30 days. You don't want to be skipping cycles entirely, and you don't want to be having short cycles. So when we think about our ideal cycle, you want to start with bright red flow on cycle day one. You don't want to have any brown spotting before you start bleeding. You don't want to have any weird discharge. You don't want to have a lot of pain. You can have a little bit of cramping for one day where you have to take ibuprofen one time is what we consider normal cramping. But otherwise, when your period starts, you should be able to function. You should be able to live your life. So your period starts, you're able to function. Your bleeding is a medium flow. Too light can be a red flag, too heavy can be a red flag. So medium flow for 3 to 5 days and then tapering off. And then as you move into your ovulation phase, you really should notice 3 days of high quality cervical mucus. You don't want to have a cycle where you're entirely dry or a cycle where you have mucus the entire time. And then after we ovulate, we want to have at least a 10-day and ideally a 14-day luteal phase between the time we ovulate and the time we get our period. And you should be feeling excellent every single day, because sometimes we normalize things as women like, oh, you're just PMSing. Oh, you're super irritable. Oh, you just have a menstrual migraine. Like all of those things are huge red flags for hormonal imbalances or other things. And so you really want to be feeling amazing, excellent, great energy, great mood, even in your luteal phase. You want your period to happen as if you had no idea. It was just coming out of the blue. That is what we consider ideal hormone balance.
That's so good. And I know from personal experience, and I know so many women are probably listening and they're like, wait, I definitely have some of those symptoms. And I thought it was totally normal, because I think what we see nowadays is so many symptoms are labeled as normal when really they should just be labeled as common, but not actually normal. So can you tell us what are some of these symptoms that are often dismissed as normal, but are actually good indicators that there's a hormone imbalance happening?
A lot of us grew up, for example, going to high school, having to miss school, having to call out of school, throwing up when we're on our period. And some of our friends were doing that too. And we thought it was normal. But if you're a person who you and your heating pad are best friends, you and your ibuprofen are best friends, you can't function when you're on your period. You literally have to plan around your period because it's such a heinous experience. That's definitely not normal. And there's usually a lot of contributing factors, like hormones is just one of many things that we have to look at. But that and PMS symptoms are a really big deal. And then bleeding is another big deal. So you really want to have like a good heavy flow, no odor, and you want it to not be super heavy, not be super light. And you do not want to be bleeding outside of your period, because sometimes I have patients who have spotting mid-cycle all the time and other people have told them that it's normal. The only time you should bleed is just on your period. That's it.
Yes. Great tips right there. What daily habits do you feel like are quietly harming women's hormones that most people might not realize is actually an issue and actually harming them?
My two kind of big things that I have little soapboxes are sugar is huge because sugar is a huge source of inflammation. And what people don't realize is you actually want to keep your inflammation really low in your body in order to ovulate properly, because your ovaries are what literally makes hormones and your ovaries also ovulate. So if you're really inflamed, it can contribute to a lot of ovulation dysfunction. Plus, you don't want your fallopian tubes to be inflamed because you want the egg and the sperm to be able to meet up and go down the fallopian tube. And then you don't want your uterus to be inflamed because you don't want to have a hostile environment for implantation. So there's so many areas where we look for inflammation and try to decrease it. And then gut is another big one. And a lot of the bad gut microbiomes that we think about that are associated with bloating and gas, those feed on sugar. So there's a lot of reasons why I really focus on sugar, especially with relation to women's health. But the really tough thing is, number one, we're sneaking sugar into everything. There's sugar in peanut butter. There's sugar in ketchup. There's sugar in spaghetti sauce. And then number two, we're substituting sugar for artificial sweetener, which is just as bad for us. Because now we have probiotic soda with stevia, and everything has stevia or monk fruit. Now we're getting sneaky. And yes, glucose, erythritol, mannitol. There's so many sneaky, and maltodextrin. There's like a gazillion sneaky and hidden sugar. So it's really, really hard. Marketing is so tough. Sometimes they will say sugar-free, no artificial sweeteners. And there's a lot of artificial sweeteners on the back. So I really encourage people to just be label readers. Look at the back. Make sure you're not getting a ton of added sugar. And then I also recommend eating breakfast.
Yes.
You're not a breakfast person in 2025. You are now a breakfast person in 2026.
Yes, that is a great piece of advice. I can't function without breakfast. I don't know how people do it, but I do have a lot of friends who are like, I just eat like a piece of toast and that's it. Or like, I don't eat till lunch. I'm like, how do you do that?
Your body needs, it makes maximum cortisol within 1 hour of waking up. And that's when it's designed to have nourishment. So we really want to be eating high quality breakfast within 1 hour of waking up because we need to nourish and feed our body when it's designed to be nourished. A lot of people wake up and they're not hungry. It's just you have to train your body to be hungry.
Totally. So we have sugar and breakfast eating as two habits to improve in, less sugar and more breakfast. What else do you feel like are factors that women in today's age are encountering that are secretly affecting their hormones?
Just some of the basics are actually just extremely important. For example, vegetables are huge because they have so many antioxidants, so much fiber to support our gut health. And vegetables is where we get most of our B vitamins. And B vitamins are the building blocks to making hormones, especially estrogen and progesterone. So when we think about our vegetable audit, I really encourage people to be eating at least 3 to 6 vegetables a day. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just those little habits. And I think a lot of times in our world, we hear about keto and gluten-free and paleo and intermittent fasting, and we tend to be very restrictive. But when it comes to hormones, you actually really want to be very nourishing.
Mm-hmm.
You want to think about things that nourish you, not restrict or starve it. Because when our body's restricted and starving and it's in starvation mode, we hold on to weight. We don't make hormones because our body only makes hormones when we're safe and nourished and not stressed. So I really encourage you to think about being nourished, like lots of meat, lots of veggies, lots of fruit, lots of protein, instead of being restrictive.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think touching on stress is an important thing too. I've definitely heard stress is like something that is so, again, common nowadays. Everybody's busy. Everybody's schedules are packed. Everybody's workload is heavy, and stress is a big thing that also affects our hormones. The other thing that I have learned a lot about too is toxins in our products, which I know that you've talked about before too. Do you have any thoughts on either of those two, like stressful lifestyle, toxins in your products? Do you feel like that actually affects hormones?
Yes. And we actually measure toxins. We do a test to see what your toxic load is, because the biggest thing that I see contribute is sometimes people have really low hormones or they have ovulation dysfunction. And there can be toxins that are associated with that. But it's definitely helpful to test, because sometimes when we think about toxins, we just don't know where to start. You think, can I eat this? Can I drink this? Do I have to go organic? So sometimes it's kind of nice to know where you are, because if you have a zero toxin load, then you're good. Like what you're doing is good. But if your toxins are high, then yes, we need to look at, are you having a lot of vegetables that have pesticides in them? Are the things that you're putting on your skin have microplastics? Are you consuming anything that's giving you heavy metals? So that's helpful in general, just to not be doing those things. But it's also helpful to test so you know how deep down you need to go as far as getting rid of toxins. And then stress is huge. Mm-hmm. Stress, there's 6 pillars of hormone balance that I think are super important: diet, sleep, stress, exercise, weight, spirituality, and mentality. So stress is literally one of the 6 pillars of hormone balance. So we need to make cortisol. We make cortisol in the morning, and then our cortisol level decreases over time. However, if our cortisol levels are just super, super high all day long, it will suppress your hormone production. You'll see that your hormones are lower. I think stress is really hard, though, because sometimes either in a hormone journey or in fertility journey, a lot of times we say, oh, don't worry about it. Don't stress. Like, if you don't stress, it will happen, which is totally unhelpful because we are going to stress. Like, we are. The fertility journey is super stressful. Getting your period is really, really hard. The 2-week wait is extremely anxiety provoking. Seeing everybody get pregnant on Instagram, can't get pregnant, it just causes tons of stress. So you have to stress a little bit how you think about hunger. Like, how do you plan your day so that you're not hungry? Do you need to prep your breakfast? Do you need to prep your lunch? Do you need to have a certain amount of protein? Like, what do you need to do to prevent yourself from getting hangry and try to anticipate that a little bit? Like, yeah, well, are we going to be hungry? Yes, sometimes we just are going to be hungry. Like, our life gets busy. And then there's like healthy things that we can choose or unhealthy things we can choose when we're hungry. Stress is a little bit like that. Like, yes, in the 2-week wait, you will be stressed. Like, you just will, right? If you have tons of work going on and you're trying to plan for Christmas, like, you are going to be stressed. So as much as we can plan ahead, plan for that, plan healthy foods, plan sleep, know what our bodies need. Like, is this a time where you need to pull back on your social things? Is this a time where you do need to reach out to your friends because you need a little bit more extra support? Like, in the time of stress, how are you going to manage that? And then when you are stressed, you want to have literal healthy things that you can do to bring your stress level down instead of, you know, obviously there's unhealthy things, but like, okay, if you're feeling really stressed, what's your stress action plan? What are the things that you need to do to help you in the moment so it's not overwhelming you in a way where it's going to impact your life and your fertility?
Yeah, that's super wise. Yeah, I love that. And it's so true. Like, people are often saying, like, as soon as you relax, I'm sure you'll get pregnant. Like, as soon as you stop stressing. And I always compare it to, like, you try telling a mom to not worry about her kids. She's always going to worry about her kids. Mom's always going to be worried about her kids' well-being, her kids' safety, all that stuff, right? And so it's like, moms can't just not worry. And like, soon-to-be moms also can't just not worry. Like, it's just part of the process. Just part of the process.
Yeah, and it's important to identify that and know what you need during that journey.
Absolutely. So you've touched on it a little bit, but I know that you are super big on supporting your hormones naturally, especially with nutrition, and that's like a foundation of how you approach it. Can you share what are the most important ways nutrition supports healthy hormones and fertility?
Yeah, nutrition is my favorite because it's such a cornerstone of health. I have so many patients. Like, yes, I use lots of medication. I do surgery and things like that. But no matter what, we're not going to be able to heal you unless we really focus on your nutrition. So some of the core things that I recommend: you want to eat breakfast within an hour of waking up. And most women need about 60 to 80 grams of protein a day. It's a little bit personalized. For example, if you work out really hard or you're trying to build a lot of muscle mass, you're going to need more protein. But on average, you need about 20 grams of protein a meal and then a high protein snack. And then women, we do need carbohydrates. You just want to have high quality grains that have a high fiber to carbohydrate ratio as opposed to low quality grains. So we don't want to be doing white rice, white bread. We want to be doing brown rice, you know, all kinds of different ancient grain bread, spelt, buckwheat, einkorn, lots of seeds, things like that. And then diversity is huge. If we can be doing lots of different types of vegetables, lots of different types of nuts, seeds, things like that. And that stuff is just really important to get into your daily habits all the time. Because it's easy to go to Sprouts, buy 7 different types of seeds, and then they all sit in our pantry and we don't actually eat them. Mm-hmm. You really just want to keep your routine stable. And sometimes all this stuff can be really, really overwhelming. And it's helpful to just start with a couple basic principles. Like, every meal, I'm going to eat breakfast every morning. I'm going to have 20 grams of protein and 2 veggies every meal. Like, if it's too overwhelming to do, like, worry about being organic and all this stuff. Just start with the basics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And something that I've done is trying to focus on different things per month, because I think at the beginning of our journey, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to do all of these different things. And then I just ended up basically doing nothing for months, because I was like, if I can't, and that's just my personality, right? I'm like, if I can't do it all, I'm not going to do anything at all, because I'm just going to like do it like not as good. And so then I was like, okay, I need to just take it like month by month and like add one new habit or one new practice at a time. So if that's helpful to anybody, take that and run with it and let yourself just focus on one new habit at a time and then build that month to month. I'm glad you mentioned protein. That is another thing that I feel like we're seeing a huge uptick just in our culture talking about it. Like all of a sudden, like everyone is aware about how important protein is. So how much you mentioned 60 to 80 grams of protein is what might be helpful for women. What are your favorite protein sources? Because I think sometimes it's hard for women to like meet those high protein goals. And I know for myself, I only really like one egg in the morning, max two on a good day. So I'm like, how am I supposed to do this during the day?
Yes, it is hard to get that much protein in. The two sources of protein are going to be meat and plants. For people who don't eat meat, then you obviously really have to focus on plants. But it does help to know what kind of foods have protein in them, because then you can diversify a little bit. Because one egg is about 5 grams of protein. If you're like, I'm definitely not going to have 4 eggs every morning. Things that you want to do are beans are huge for protein. Cheese is huge. Like one slice of cheese has 6 grams of protein. So if you're a body that can tolerate dairy, all forms of dairy can be helpful. One serving of milk has 9 grams of protein. So, and then one serving of peanut butter has 3 grams of protein. So helping get a little bit diverse protein sources can be great. Like for breakfast, if you need to mix it up, you can do cottage cheese, full fat, plain Greek yogurt, breakfast sausage, bacon, eggs, beans, cheese. Quinoa is a big one. That's probably not everyone's favorite breakfast food, but a serving of quinoa almost has 20 grams of protein.
Wow. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. If you're tired of scrolling through media that feels fake, goes against your values, or just feels like it's trying to sell you something, then I want to tell you about Verily. Verily cuts through the noise to elevate what's honest, real, and beautiful for the modern woman. They're the original no Photoshop AI model-free women's magazine, which I love, and they're committed to pushing back against the objectification of women. In both their digital content and their seasonal print magazine, Verily features fashion that's worthy of the women who wear and make it. Thoughtful writing on relationships and journalism that actually embraces nuance. When you become a member, you're not just getting great content, you're joining a community that's working to change women's media for the better. And if you ask me, I think 2026, we're going back to analog. So get yourself a magazine subscription. If that sounds like your kind of thing, you can join at verilymag.com/membership.
Yeah, so being like throwing some quinoa on a salad, alternating between like tofu has protein in it, beans has protein. So alternating between a lot of those different things. And then meat is just the easiest way to get a lot of protein. So one chicken breast has 20 grams of protein. One fillet of salmon has 20 grams of protein. So even just making it a couple slices of chicken breast, some quinoa, throw some vegetables on there, throw some seeds, nuts. Diversifying that protein gets you there faster if you're feeling a bit overwhelmed by having to eat 20 grams. Other big hacks are do protein powder. Yeah. I think my big thing about protein is that you want to get it from an actual source. I call it a primal diet. All cheese should come from an animal. All meat should come from an animal. Like you just want it to come from a plant or something that you know what it is. Because a huge fad is like protein bars, protein shakes. But the huge bummer is that they have a ton of additives and often a ton of added sugar. Because, for example, they'll market it as a protein bar and it will have 37 grams of carbohydrates and only 15 grams of protein. Then you're just having a giant load of carbs relative to your protein. Well, I try to get people to stay away from protein bars and protein shakes. And just if you want to make it, just make it yourself. Like use protein powder where literally only ingredient is protein. You can do pea protein, mung bean protein, rice protein, or just bovine collagen protein. But your protein powder shouldn't taste good. When you blend up a chicken or you blend up peas, you're not thinking, oh, this tastes delicious, right? Like if your protein powder tastes delicious, that's a red flag.
What protein powder do you recommend? Do you have a brand that you like or that you recommend?
So my two favorite brands, I really like Vital Proteins because they have grass-fed bovine collagen, and you can get it at Costco, so you can get it in a really big volume. Mm-hmm. And then for plant-based protein, there's a company called Truvia that makes an unflavored protein, and they do a combination of pumpkin seeds, pea, and rice.
Is it truly unflavored?
Yeah, but it's unflavored. Like, you don't want to eat it by itself because it will taste gross.
Yeah. I feel like I've had some unflavored things, but you can, like, still taste something funky going on.
I mean, it is pea protein. So yeah. Ground up peas, they do not taste good by themselves.
Absolutely. Have you heard of Equip Protein? I've heard great things about that.
No, I'll have to look it up. I'm like, always on the hunt for good protein.
I will send you the link. I've heard great things about it. And I believe the only ingredient is like grass-fed something meat. Like, I know it's like literally from cows. And so it's always like, how is this ever going to taste good? Okay, but it does taste fine. So now I'm like, maybe this is a red flag because I can tolerate it in my shake in the morning. But I'll send you the link to have you vet it.
But bovine collagen, it really doesn't have a taste.
Okay.
My husband is very skeptical about all things, and I had him put it in his coffee and he literally couldn't taste the difference. Like, you can, if you want a little hack, put a couple scoops of collagen in your coffee and you can't even taste it. You can throw it into other things, smoothies, yogurt.
Absolutely. Yes. Great hacks to get your protein intake up. One other thing I know you're big on that I'd love for you to touch on is regulating your blood sugar, because that's something that is like relatively new that I've learned in the past few months that I didn't realize impacted hormones. What is the relationship? What do you have to share about that?
Yeah. You really want to keep your blood sugar flat all day long, because you never want it to be low, because if it's low and you're intermittent fasting or you've been working all day long and you haven't been eating lunch and you're super hangry, then your blood sugar will get really low. And then no matter what you put into your body, your blood sugar will be high. So it is really important to eat consistently to keep your blood sugar stable. And then principles that you just want to follow or think about, we try to have a 1-to-1 carb to protein ratio. So if you're having 20 grams of pasta, you want to make sure you're doing 20 grams of protein with that. And the hard part about that sometimes is like fruit and snacks. So if you're going to have an apple as a snack, an apple has about 10 grams of sugar. So you've got to eat 10 grams of protein just to match or balance that. So you want to be doing a beef stick, a cheese stick, something like that. Most of the time, women need 3 to 4 hour fasting windows, because when we think about intermittent fasting, like, it is important to fast, which means you really want to sit down and have a full actual meal that sustains you and fills you up, so you're not hungry for 3 to 4 hours. You don't want to be the kind of person where you're like, I'm just a snacker and I'm snacking all day long. That's really not good for your blood sugar. So we really want to eat meals that have a lot of protein regularly, like breakfast, lunch, dinner. And if any of those meals are spaced out, then definitely put a high protein snack in there, just to keep our blood sugar stable and steady all day long. Not too high, not too low.
Amazing. If people want to learn more about like what spikes their blood sugar and how to regulate it, what do you recommend?
There is a gal named the Glucose Goddess who has an Instagram. She's fantastic. She writes 2 books. One's called The Glucose Goddess and one's called The Glucose Revolution. And she just has really practical tips. And I love it because I'm all about being practical.
Yeah.
Like you said, if it's not you, it's not something that you're going to do. If it's not in line with your vibe or your vision, you're just not going to do it. So you just want to make sure that what you actually are doing is practical for your life.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Let's talk practical. If women focused on just 3 habits to support their hormones, what would you recommend those 3 habits be?
Vegetables, minimizing sugar, diversifying food sources.
Okay, talk a little bit about that. What do you mean by that, diversifying food sources?
So, for example, if you're just a person that doesn't eat a lot of seeds, every time you go to the grocery store, just buy a new seed. Mm-hmm. Try pumpkin seeds, buy gums, throw them on your yogurt, throw them in a smoothie, try chia seeds, try a different type of nuts that you've never tried, try a vegetable that you've never tried, beets and radishes, zucchini and squash, because the more diversity you have, the more B vitamins you're going to get from your food. The more beta vitamins you have, the easier your body has the building blocks to make estrogen or progesterone.
Beautiful.
And if you don't like it, you'll force it down. I really don't like kale. Am I going to eat raw kale? No. I'll eat it baked. I'll put it in a smoothie. But to just force myself to eat kale every day, I'm just not a kale person. So I got to either find a different way to eat kale, like kale chips, or just find some other green vegetables that I like spinach. So you just have to know yourself, try different, see what works for you.
Totally. Yeah. I know chia seeds, you mentioned chia seeds, and I think they have like a good amount of, a surprising amount of protein in like one tablespoon, right?
Chia seeds are amazing because they have protein, fiber, and omega-3s.
Yeah. But sometimes I find it hard to eat like a whole tablespoon of chia seeds. So I'll put it into my smoothie and blend it up. And then you don't even taste it or anything. And you just like ate a whole tablespoon of chia seeds.
Yeah. And some people love the crunch. Like they like that texture.
Yeah. Okay. What is something that you wish every woman knew about fertility before she ever started trying to conceive?
I think it's important to know the basics and I'd be able to identify red flags right away. So you want to track your cycle, make sure you're getting a regular cycle, pay attention to your symptoms in relation to your cycle, pay attention to your bleeding, pay attention to your cervical mucus and it's never too early to just check things and just make sure things are looking okay. Get your hormones checked. Get an ultrasound. Make sure your uterus is healthy. Make sure your uterus lining is healthy. Make sure your egg quality is healthy. Make sure your ovaries are healthy. Because the earlier you're proactive about your health, the easier it is, number one, to get pregnant. But also, I think in fertility journey, it's easy to have a sprint. Like, oh, you know, we're going to do this for 60 days so that we can get you pregnant, which of course our goal is to get you pregnant. But equally as important as we just want you to have like lifelong habits and lifelong health. So you feel really good, amazingly every single day, no matter what season it is, whether you're really busy at Christmas or you have this huge deadline at work and not that we're like just ping ponging between different diets and all kinds of different things, but we just have habits that we do every single day to promote our hormone health so that things don't go out of whack. Because if you're a person who has really sensitive hormones, it's really easy to throw it off. So then we're just constantly like, okay, we threw out our hormones. Now we're rebuilding it. So those habits that maintain our hormones day in and day out are super important. It's never too early to work on that and just know your own hormone profile and your own metabolism and what it needs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You mentioned tracking your cycle. And I know that a lot of women just don't even know what that looks like or what that means. What are some ways that you recommend women can do that?
At the very least, I would document when you bleed. And then there's lots of things that you can document beyond that. But when you bleed is huge because sometimes it's hard to remember. We only have our period every month. Sometimes it's hard to remember when we had it. So you're like, I think I'm regular. But if we look at it, it's actually not as regular as you think. Mm-hmm. So any data that you document is actually really, really helpful. So the most important things that are really helpful are when you bleed, how much you're bleeding. If there was anything unique about that, so any brown spotting, light spotting, any cramps that you have, and then symptoms. Did you have a headache? Were you moody? Were you irritable? And cervical mucus. If you're getting stretchy, clear cervical mucus, that's obvious. That's a glop on the toilet paper when you wipe. Those are the kind of things that you want to write down. Because any abnormalities in those things can be red flags that we can work on right away. And then you'll kind of get the sense because you really want to know your body. You want to know, okay, when should I be getting my period? When should I be ovulating? Because then you can self-identify if there's any red flags right away if something is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Are there any trends in women's health right now that you feel are concerning?
I get really nervous about people when they go gluten-free. Because it's just very popular right now. However, you should only be gluten-free if you need to be gluten-free. So if you're a person and you eat gluten and you feel horrible, then yes, absolutely you should be gluten-free. But if you can tolerate gluten, it's important to have a variety of food. Because if you look at all the gluten-free things out there, they all have rice flour, almond flour, and tapioca starch. Like, you can eat a bunch of gluten-free muffins that are horrible for you. They have no nutritional value. So I get nervous when people go gluten-free because they're eating a lot of low-quality carbohydrates. If you need to be gluten-free, you need to focus on high-quality gluten-free grains. But those are weird things like einkorn, buckwheat, millet, amaranth. It's not things that you've always heard of every single day. So it's kind of hard to be gluten-free and get enough grains. Because I'd rather that you eat gluten than you eat high quality grains and that you go gluten free and you eat really low quality gluten free food. Because you still have to maintain those principles that you still want to have a 1-to-1 carb to protein ratio and things like that. So it's just really important to know your body and know what it needs, because there's a lot of fads, a lot of trends out there, and that might be good for you and it might not. Like, yes, if it is good for you to go gluten, you'll know because you'll feel amazing. But if your body can tolerate gluten, it's actually good to eat gluten because you need the B vitamins in whole grains, like B1, B6, and B7 in order to make estrogen.
But that's coming just from those good quality grains, like you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because certain vitamins come from really specific food sources.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I will say those are so tricky to find, and I tried to bake this summer with einkorn flour. I tried to make a bread with einkorn flour and it came out of the oven. Oh my gosh, so bad. It came out of the oven looking like a flat bread. And I was like, maybe we just won't do this. So it's definitely a learning curve. Anybody out there that wants to burn their sourdough.
Okay, I recommend half buckwheat, half einkorn. Because buckwheat gives it a little more of that airy breadiness, where einkorn is a little more dense.
Okay, awesome. That's great advice. I'm definitely going to try that.
Bring me a loaf and I'll taste test it.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Yeah, because sourdough like used to be my thing. And then you went on your whole sourdough soapbox and I was like, all right, we're going to ditch the sourdough for a little bit. And so then I'm like, I'm going to do einkorn. And then I tried it one time and I was like, I am not going to do einkorn. So now we got to do the mix. We'll try it with the buckwheat and see how it goes.
Yeah. Go back to the lab. You got to run a few more experiments on it.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. How long does hormone healing actually take? And what does patients look like in this process?
Usually it takes about 3 to 6 months. The hard thing about women is that it takes us a whole month to have our period. So it takes a whole month just to learn. But the more data that you have, the a little bit more aggressive you can be. So if you're tracking your hormones, you're doing a urinary monitor, you're tracking your temperature on Aura, you're tracking your cervical mucus and your bleeding and your symptoms, it's really helpful to say, okay, what were the problems from this cycle? What do we need to fix for the next cycle? So we can have a little bit more data, be a little bit more aggressive about it. Sometimes you can balance your hormones faster. But also just depends where you're coming from. If you're coming from a place where you've had your hormones imbalanced for a long time, it'll take a bit longer. Just know that there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Good. Yes, absolutely. Can you share a little bit about how like each cycle compounds on each other?
Yes, it takes 90 days for your body to recruit an egg because you're born with all the eggs that you ever have. It's kind of a wild thing about women. Like, we're literally born with all the eggs that we're ever going to have. However, there's a whole maturation process that goes on in order to get that egg to ovulate. So every month, your body picks certain follicles to get ready. It's almost like they're in the back chamber. And then every month, your body will pick one of those follicles to become the dominant follicle. But those follicles that are in the chamber ready to become the dominant follicle, they started getting recruited 3 months ago. So month over month over month, especially 3 months in a row of hormone balance really sets you up for success for future healthy hormones.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's really good to hear because I know that anybody going through this process, right? And if you've been in a journey of trying to heal your hormones or heal your fertility for a while, it can get frustrating and you're just like, I can't see the progress visually and you get impatient. And so knowing, you know, thinking that like what I do now doesn't just affect this cycle, but it affects the next few cycles and it's going to affect the quality in the next few cycles, I think is really encouraging to hear. What, as we wrap up here, what last encouragement would you want to offer women who maybe feel discouraged or frustrated in their fertility or hormone healing journey right now?
Yes, 100%. I think one thing that's important to know is that there are seasons of everything. Yeah. And you have to realize that if you're struggling with fertility, that is a season and it can be a constant kind of grief. And so you really have to understand and know yourself and know what you need in that season. Like what nourishes you, what keeps you happy, what keeps you going, what motivates you, when can you have a lot of momentum, when you need time to be a little bit more introspective, because you are going to have those times of grief and you're going to have those times of hope. So just knowing that that's a season and you might need something different in that season in your life than other seasons is really helpful. Also, you're right. Sometimes when your period comes and you're like, nothing I'm doing is working, even though you've done all of these beneficial things, it's helpful to have other markers to kind of pay attention to other than pregnancy. And some of that can be like fitness goals, sleep goals, nutrition goals, energy goals, because it's really important to be able to look at your progress and look at your wins. Mm-hmm. For example, like if you're wanting on your sleep, you're like, okay, I'm going to get to bed at 10 o'clock every single night. And that's going to be my goal. Like maybe you're not pregnant, but now you have more energy. You feel better. Like all of those little things, you're totally right, adds up to help your fertility, even if you don't see it right away. So it's helpful to have other goals that motivate you and make you feel good. Like maybe you want to sign up for a half marathon that you've never signed up for. Maybe you want to have an accountability group and text all your friends and make sure they're all eating breakfast as a way of bonding, you know, just things like that. So you can do little tiny things that give you joy, bring you happiness, actually make you healthier and make you feel great on the road to fertility.
I love that. That's really good advice. One thing I would add to that's been helpful for me personally is doing seasonal bucket lists. I think like as the seasons change, you kind of, at least I do, think of like, wow, like I'm entering, you know, another holiday season without a baby in my arms. And it can be really overwhelming to be like, oh, it's another new year or another summer where I thought we'd have a baby on vacation, right? You just like think of these like seasonal milestones. And so I've made different like seasonal bucket lists where I'm like, okay, winter can be hard sometimes. Like, what are some fun things that I want to do this winter? And actually put them on the calendar. Like, okay, want to make gingerbread houses with my girlfriends, or we're going to go see Christmas lights or watch a Christmas movie date night with my husband. And then it's kind of just adds like fun activities to your life and that season and brings a little bit of joy in the midst of the hardship.
I love that. Yeah, it's so important to have things that make you happy, keep you healthy, bring you joy in the journey.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, that is our time here. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Sarah, today. I really hope that people were taking notes because we covered a lot of good information that I know are going to be so helpful, a lot of practical tips. Tell us more, where can our listeners learn more about you or follow you or get connected with everything you do?
Yes, our website is verafertility.com. We have a clinic that specializes in holistic fertility and hormone balance here in Denver, Colorado. And then you can follow us on Instagram at Vera Fertility or on TikTok if you just want some daily little tips similar to what we talked about today.
Yes, I will say I've been following along with the daily tips and they are very helpful. So highly recommend giving them a follow. We'll make sure to link all of that in the show notes so people can find it. Thanks so much for joining us today, Dr. Sarah.
Thank you. It's such a joy.
Okay, now moving into Everbee Answers. I brought Trey on today for this segment.
Hey.
And we're going to give you a little taste of what our after parties are like because Trey comes on every week after my regular episode and we do our little after party for our Kingdom Club community. So we go over the questions that our Kingdom Club asks and just share a little bit about like our life, just like a little life update, like what we did that week or what stood out to us or so.
And you get to hear from me again.
Which the people love, Trey. The people love hearing from you.
All right. Let's get into Everbee Answers.
Yes. Okay. So the question for Everbee Answers today is, how would you and Trey respond to someone who says, just because you go to church every Sunday or go to church in general doesn't make you a good person? Or some of the most vile people I know are religious people who go to church and post about Bible scriptures. Have y'all ever been told something like that? If not, how would you respond to those comments? I've been seeing a lot of these comments on TikTok lately. You know, I would just say, you're right. Like,
yeah,
that's true. Just because you go to church on Sunday or go to church at all does not mean you're a good person.
Yeah, or just because you label yourself Christian doesn't automatically make you a good person. Or for that sake, even a Christian, just because you call yourself one.
Yeah. Isn't that what you just said?
No. Like, if you call yourself a Christian, that does make you a good person.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, just because you call yourself Christian, you have that label, it doesn't actually, like, make you a Christian either.
Oh, true. Absolutely. And, like, just because you share Bible verses or have a Bible verse on your Instagram bio also doesn't just automatically make you a good person.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there is truth to that. And so I would just respond, right? Because what they're trying to do is basically trying to just...
They're trying to bait you. They're trying to rage bait you.
They're trying to bait you into being like, not all Christians are good, don't you know? Clearly, there's like hurt in their life and in their heart. Clearly, they've been hurt by other Christians.
Yeah.
And the reality, right, is that I feel like the world likes to put Christians in a box and be like, well, because you follow Jesus, you're supposed to be perfect. Like, you're supposed to be like the best people on the planet, which, like, yeah, is true, right? Like, we should, if we're followers of Christ, like, we should genuinely, like, radiate Christ's love. However, we are broken humans. Mm-hmm. And so the expectation is that we're going to be imperfect. And like Trey said, just because you have the label does not mean that you are automatically a good person.
And I think we try as humans to make things black and white. It's like easier for our brain to understand the world in black and white, right and wrong, because it's more difficult and challenging to give grace, to be forgiving, to like love within the messy. And our brain, and like, it's easier, the path of least resistance is often easier to just like write people off or say yes or no or black and white. And so these people that are, you know, doing this rage baiting and like saying that, you know, Christians are bad people, or just because you're Christian doesn't make you good, like, that's just an overgeneralization. And I mean, it's just the result of woundedness and being hurt by Christians and experiencing hypocrisy within the church. And so, I mean, like,
it's just an angry comment.
Yeah,
like, so, it's just an angry comment, because you could literally say, like, just because you're not Christian doesn't mean you're a bad person.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you could say the opposite and be like, just literally because you're not Christian, you don't follow Jesus, doesn't automatically make you a bad person. And that's true too.
Right. And we know it's like, you have to live what you believe. And I think that there is, you know, I mean, everybody can be guilty of this. And I know I've been guilty of this, of like living like hypocritically, of like what I say or what I think I believe, and then I'm not actually living that. And so it's, I think when you're confronted with this, or if somebody says this to you, it's good. It's like good to be honest with yourself and have humility and be like, yeah, like there are times that I'm not living like Christ, and I am broken and I am fallen. And, but I think the point is not to like get into this like really kind of ridiculous argument.
To me, it's just kind of a waste of time in the comments.
Right. But if it's like being confronted like face to face.
Yeah.
Then it's having the humility to be like, yeah, you're right. Like, people are broken. Christians, being Christian doesn't make you a good person, but like,
being Christian doesn't make you any less human.
Right. But we're like still striving and trying to live with Christ in our life and live with love and, you know, ultimately live for heaven and like all the things that, you know, from the commandments in the Old Testament to like what Jesus is saying in the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes, like that is what we're called to live. Mm-hmm. And we're like, as Christians, we should be trying to do that. And I mean, I think if you're doing it well, you are a good person. And if you're living the Christian life well, you are a good person.
Yep. So how would you respond specifically, like, to somebody who commented this on your TikTok, your Instagram, DMs, whatever? I would say, yeah, that's true. Just because you go to church on Sundays does not automatically make you a good person. And then tie in some of what Trey was saying about like tying it back to your life and say, I myself included, am just a regular broken human being trying to do the best I can to follow Christ. And say something about like, just because you're going to church doesn't also mean that you're truly actively like living a Christ-centered life and following in Christ's ways. And the people who are truly striving to do that, I do believe, are genuinely struggling people in this world, you know, and kind of just make that distinction. And then just leave it at that. I honestly don't really give much time to dumb comments because they're angry people on the internet that aren't ready to receive what you have to say, likely anyways. So.
Yeah.
All right. So
now we'll transition to the after party for those on the Kingdom Club.
Now we'll transition to the after party. So if you want to hear what we're going to chat about, we're going to chat about any traditions from Trey's family that we've adopted into our marriage and any traditions from my family that we've adopted into our marriage. And then we're also going to be answering, from a Catholic perspective, what guidance would you offer to an engaged couple preparing for marriage when one partner is struggling with a pornography addiction? How can the other partner heal from hurt, work towards forgiveness, and protect their own emotional and spiritual well-being during the engagement? And what concrete steps should the partner struggling with pornography be taking before marriage? Is this a common issue among couples today? And can a couple still have a healthy, faithful Catholic marriage? So we're really going to get into it, and we'll catch you all at the after party. Thank you so much for listening in. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and on social media, and give me a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. That helps me and the show out so much. Also, make sure to follow the podcast on Instagram at EverBePodcast. And if you want more content like this and you don't already follow me, you can also follow me on Instagram at mari.c.wagner. And may his praise ever be on our lips. God bless.